ahead and introduce, the next item on the agenda is Merrill Lynch, Jeff Hewitt, and Paul Harvey, of course, when your each floor will come and give the report on the investment performance for the solar plan.
If I can get the same word. Director, Mr. Chair, directors, employees of Brazos River Authority, if you would, please turn to the black booklet. Since our last update, in this particular update, it covers from 1 June to 31 August of this year. There's been a lot of changes since our last update. First, Merrill Lynch Investment Managers have merged completely with BlackRock now, so that you'll know all of our updates in the future will be branded as BlackRock. As far as that particular change, it was fairly seamless. It has no effect upon the portfolio, where we still have the same management team in place. Second, since our last meeting, we've seen new highs in the Dow, numerous times. We'll let Paul comment about some of that, and we've also got some new leadership in this great country. With that, performance is good for this quarter, for this report. Our asset allocation is in accordance with the investment policy, and we're looking forward to better results in the future. With that, I'd like to turn it over to Paul. He will get into our outlook. Some of it, as you look through, we'll have to address on, as well as the nuts and bolts of the portfolio.
Yeah, I was sitting over there with Jeff and for the meeting, and he said, I'm sure there'll be interesting comments about the change in control. He was talking about Congress. I was thinking about Merrill Lynch and BlackRock. I'm going to start out there just to, it's kind of the big picture, and it's relevant to your portfolio, the way they're managed. If you turn to tab 3, at the very back, it's got a brief summary of BlackRock. I'm not going to get too much detail, let me just tell you in general. The way the merger took place, BlackRock bought 51% of Merrill Lynch Investment Managers. So this is, they're buying that from Merrill Lynch Company. Merrill Lynch Company has three divisions. The asset management group, which I would work for, being the smallest. So I think from their standpoint, they wanted to move that over towards a fully managed asset management company. Merrill Lynch Company still owns 49.8% of BlackRock. So they're not getting out of asset management business by any means. What they're wanting to do is to be able to leverage everything BlackRock had and help that help us, basically. For those of you who are not aware of BlackRock, they came on intervening around 1988 and have grown significantly since then. They are a major player in institutional and fixed income management. A lot of people are aware of PIMCO, Bill Gross, and the group talking on CNBC. BlackRock is right up there. Typically, if you have institutional mandates, there'll be two or three players in there. PIMCO and BlackRock are two of those, and BlackRock's are in the fixed income space. As far as the way your portfolio is managed, there's absolutely no change at all. Bob Dahl is going to be the spokesman for BlackRock. He heads up the equity portion of BlackRock, private or BlackRock itself. And he is one that actually is the portfolio manager on this bigger portfolio, on the large cap core portfolio. Bob Dahl doesn't want to make a decision, so he obviously is still in place doing that. On the fixed income side, we'll continue to manage that as we can, or as we have, and at some point, we may be able to leverage some of BlackRock's capabilities. They've got some pretty sophisticated ways of doing fixed income business. It can be useful in larger institutional mandates. We're trying to find a way to use that in a portfolio this size in terms of separate accounts. So, again, there's no change in the way your portfolio is managed. No change in my job, no change in Bob Dahl's job. So, any questions about that before we move forward? All right, what I thought I'd start out by doing is making a few comments about the economy and any stocks, and then answer questions you got about any of those. If you turn to page 2, this in a nutshell is where we are with the economy. It shows the trends, bar chart with showing inflation, GDP, and corporate earnings. As you can see, it's trending down. This is what we've been expecting for some time now. We're coming up on what we've been expecting in terms of the debt cycle slowdown. We're starting to see more and more signs of that. Corporate earnings continue to be surprisingly strong, which is not a bad thing. It does have postponed the decline in interest rates, but we do feel like that's where we are in terms of cycle. And again, it's not unusual. We had it back in the 80s and 90s. We're just in that term, at that point of the cycle right now. So we start to see the economy slowing. Commodity prices, including oil, are starting to moderate. The Fed has paused on short-term interest rate increases, and the 10-year treasury is back down to 4.56 as of this morning. We expect the next several months to show more of these signs. In fact, we would not be surprised to see this next quarter. We go back and go through one by one for our deficit payment this year. But one of them then we would have disappointments in corporate earnings. We haven't seen as many of those. So that we could probably put in the wrong camp. They stay surprisingly strong. We think that could start working its way in over the next quarter or two. That may have a little bit of effect on stock prices in general. The stock market, we feel like, is a little bit ahead of itself. We do feel like the market has bottomed back in July of this year. So while we're overbought, we expect some kind of a pullback. We think that is going to be a pullback in part of the bull market, which is the second phase of the bull market we've been expecting. So again, the sloppiness could come as corporate earnings disappoint a little bit. But we feel like interest rates are at or near a peak in terms of Fed funds rate, so that should bode well for stock prices. If you turn to page 9, this again gets back to the bigger picture. Your portfolio is being run with a large cap mandate. Large cap core portfolios tend to be blended with both growth and value stocks. But what I want to point out is on this particular chart, it shows the asset classes that have done the best over the last 10 years. If you look starting about 2002, you'll see that the large cap space, or the large cap core stocks, is represented considerably up there. The growth and value are also large cap in this particular chart, but large cap core represents the S&P 500. Going back since 2002, it has been either the next to last or the worst performing asset class. So that's been the environment we've been in over the last 5 years. We said for some time we feel like that's going to shift and the large cap style will come back in favor. We think we're starting to see that now. In your portfolio, the type of stocks are starting to make new highs are the Cisco systems, the Microsofts, some large cap oil stocks, ExxonMobil, Chevron, Texaco. So while we've had somewhat of a headwind over the last many years, our portfolio managed versus the benchmark. We've done a good job of outperforming that benchmark, but when that whole asset class is out of favor, then the absolute returns may lag others. So that's where you see international stocks, small cap stocks have done the best. We may very well be in an environment where we're getting ready to see the large cap stocks, such as those in your portfolio, be the asset class of choice. We've talked in the past with John Hobbs about more diversification and having the ability to get in international small cap stocks. We'll talk to Pete a little bit about doing that. That is still a very prudent thing to do, I think, over the long term. But as long as we're in this particular mode of managing with large cap core mandates, the good news is that may very well be the asset class of choice going forward. So that's just something to keep in mind. The next page, page 10, shows two graphs that explain the reasoning of that. Again, you may have seen some of these before. The left-hand side showing actual valuations on large cap stocks coming down. The blue bar, or blue line, indicates price earnings multiples to pay for those stocks. You can see it's compressed, it's gotten down to where now the valuation is much lower on those large cap stocks relative to small cap stocks. While on the right-hand side, you can see that it's pretty much a stagnant index for the longer haul while the small cap stocks are outperforming. So again, good news is that we may be in a period where large cap stocks really start outperforming. We get a portfolio now. We'll turn over to page 13. This, again, the reason is the objective style we're using, large cap style, so the benchmark for the stock position, so the S&amp;P 500, for fixed income is high grade corporate government bond index. Page 15. I chose the allocation as of the end of August. And if you recall, last time we met, we started to increase our allocation to fixed income. At that time, interest rates had started climbing back up some. And we wanted to try to get closer to what your target benchmark is, which is the 3 years of fixed income, about 60% stocks. We don't stay on that benchmark just to match it. We do it when we think it's pretty again. After we've had declining, increased interest rates, we want to increase the fixed income portion. So you can see fixed income now is at the end of August, about 37%. Equities right at 61%. The next page, page 16, shows the top 10 holdings. You can see two of the larger holdings, Chevron, Texaco, and ExxonMobil. We've had it over with energy stock for some time. We started skewing that a little bit more towards the integrated, and it's been fairly timely into those stocks. While those energy stocks are starting to pull back some, ExxonMobil is making new highs recently. We feel like that's a better place to be in that space. We'll continue to evaluate that as oil prices start coming down. So far, the earnings have continued to be strong for these companies, so we've maintained our overweight in energy stocks. And the other top 10 holdings, we have a couple of healthcare stocks, the Johnson & Johnson, Pfizer, getting into change control of Congress. The healthcare sector is one that certainly initially stock prices have been affected negatively, and the perception is that may be a concern going forward. We factor that into all the models we work with as well. The next page is a bar chart showing the sector allocations. And we're taking somewhat of a balanced approach in the way we manage the portfolio right now. If you look at the overweights in your portfolio, our energy and technology primarily, those are deemed to be pretty cyclical. However, we've also increased our weighting in some of the more defensive classes because we feel like the higher quality stocks, as the economy slows down, typically do better. So we're aware that the economy slowing is going to help those stocks to a degree. We also feel like longer term, as the economy picks back up, the cyclical stocks will be a better place to be long term. So, page 19 is the performance. If you look at the box on the bottom, the longer box, second to the left, the year-to-date performance in portfolio 7.23% versus the benchmark, which is the bottom line. That's a blended benchmark of 4.34. So year-to-date, we've had a pretty good move. A lot of that's attributed to the stock portion of the portfolio. Equities are up 9.95% year-to-date versus the S&P at 5.79. If you take all these numbers out to a three-year annualized number, portfolio is at 10.08% versus a blended benchmark of 7.94%. And again, you see that the equities is a large component of that, being up over 14% versus the S&P up over 11%. And those are annualized numbers for the last 3 years. So again, we've had pretty good performance relative to our benchmarks. This is through the end of August. We'll get into this the next quarter, but just to give you an update, through the end of October, portfolio is up about 11.3%. And the stock portion is up 15.3% versus the S&P up 11%. So again, stock selection, sector selection, the methodology used to manage portfolio has been working very well. And keep in mind, again, all these numbers are in that environment where we've had the larger cap stocks really lagging the smaller mid-cap stocks. So hopefully not on this wood over the next few years as we come out of this mid-cycle slowdown, folks will be in larger cap stocks where the valuations are better, and that will benefit the portfolio change for you. That's all the prepared comments I've got. If you've got questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Just as an overall question, what is in terms of the performance of the investments, how, you had a district votes, is there, how does that affect our defined contributions, liabilities? In terms of reducing, our liability in the budget.
Yeah, for a defined, from a defined benefit?
Yeah.
Stand.
What we're talking about, as this becomes healthier, the IRS contribution to the benefit plan.
Yes, sir, exactly. The actuarial assumption that's used in the defined benefit plan is a 7.5% wage return year over year. So the extent that we can do better than 7.5% in, you know, year over year basis, you're actually beating that actuarial, which means that your liability should actually, or your obligation should actually go down slightly. So and that's the benchmark that we really try to do in the committee, I think, wants to certainly do is to structure the asset allocation in a way to at least get to 7.5%. But we all know we don't get that every single year. There's some ups and downs, but that's the goal. So.
Hasn't Congress just changed that with that new retirement legislation? Have they changed the assumption that we have to?
I'm not sure they've changed the assumption there as in the pension reform. So, most of that is not applicable to us as a public, plan. It's more applicable to private plans because of the reliability issues that the private sector is under right now. I'm not sure. There's more disclosure requirements and things that are required. Good news, we don't have an unfunded liability problem anywhere like, or we just don't have a problem. There's some of these things that have huge problems.
One thing to point out, if you see some of the actuarial presentations, and when they do that, they use it, I think, 5 years smoothing.
Yeah, and so we've taken some of this into account.
Yes,
it tends to have a lagging effect so that we had the real tough market good, a couple bad years relative to our benchmark. And those were smoothed out some, so you did not see big contributions back when the market was doing its poorest. Now, performance has really gotten good, and we've been outperforming the benchmark. The actual returns have been above what your actuarial assumptions are, but you're still funding some of those previous years, so we just had a big contribution go in. I would suspect that's probably your key contribution, and as we start smoothing and taking into consideration some of these years where we've outperformed the actuarial assumptions, that the funding should go down significantly, and again, we have more smooth returns going forward as we have a benchmark.
That's correct.
And just to conclude, unless there's more questions for us, after the actuarial infusion, the current value of the portfolio as of Thursday of last week was 26.4 million. Let me make one other clarification of previously when Brett was up here and I was mentioning what is happening with Gulf Carbon. The impact of a change going from a balance board type reporting to a data reporting would really require that we take the defined contribution element of our plan. Our retirement plan has two elements, defined contribution and defined benefit element. You just heard that there's about $25 to $26 million total in assets. The defined contribution element is about $2.5 million. That is about 10% of that, and about 90% of it is in the defined benefit side, which is paying the liability or the obligation we have, the benefit obligations we have to every employee and treasurer when we have a defined benefit component. But we would actually take the $2.5 million, and this is what we would propose, and we're going to bring this to you in January in the form of a proposal. We would take that $2.5 million and pull it out of the plan into another investment vehicle that then the employees would have an opportunity to direct, which is the way most defined contribution plans are. And you all, the committee, have actually taken action
about a year ago to really direct us to move forward in planning that. So that's what we're talking about doing. And so we're getting proposals right now from other entities. Wells Fargo certainly was the first one to approach us because they're the current providers, and they have a plan and they have a way to do it. But being a public entity, we need to go out and look at some other proposers and see if there's some other ones out there that can also do it and study that. That's what we're going to bring back in January.
I'm just finding the benefit program on that was 97 when it was broken out of. How was the determination rate that we were guaranteed the benefit program 7.5%?
Well, I think it wasn't guaranteed. It was just that, and I, it's a good question. I don't know how far back it may go back further than that. That was the actuarial investment target. I would call it, that was the target rate of investment that was the actuaries were using. I don't know if they used it prior to 97, but I know they used it since then.
But that's what we've been making up the difference for. Probably make the thing with time.
Well, no, you haven't been required to make it. That's just the number that the actuary uses to calculate. He assumes that the plan is going to make 7.5%. And so his calculation of how much the Brazos River Authority has to contribute for the defined benefit portion every year is based upon the plan earning 7.5%. So to the extent then they are going to have to fund more money ultimately in the future. To the extent that they make more than that, they would fund less. But as Paul was talking about, the actuarial uses a five-year smoothing. And I won't go into all the detail unless you'd like to, but as an actuarial technique, they smooth that, the impact of that out. And that's a very typical thing so that you still don't see a big spike. So even though we did have to fund more money coming out of the 2000, 2001, 2002, we had a huge downturn in the market. Almost all plans lost some money. But there was obviously increase in that. But now we've come out of that, and we're now making more than 7.5%, but still the impact is, we're getting some of that benefit, but it's, we're still, like I said, we're paying some of the losses from the prior years.
So is that a contractual requirement that we guarantee that
7.5%?
No. Or is it a annual requirement?
The only contractual requirement is that we pay the benefits as described in the plan document, so based on the formula that employees receive. They get a certain, you know, based on credit years of service and average annual pay when they retire and stuff like that. We guarantee it so that the Brazos River Authority takes the responsibility, the financial responsibility for the plan's earnings, and basically has to make whatever it needs to. In great times, then that's good. We put in less. And that's obviously different than the defined contribution side, where the defined contribution side works very differently. The responsibility of that is really within is the employee's responsibility, or whatever the plan earns is just the balance in that. And that's what the employee's benefit would be. Is just that the company's only obligation is to put in a certain contribution, a percentage of pay, as an example. And then whatever it earns. And that's why it's important to really move, I believe, and Pat Adams felt this way too, is to move to an environment where the employees have more control over the investment of that, because they're really the person that is ultimately going to benefit from that one way or the other. Any other questions?